This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 18th, 2015. We'll continue on the opinion page with letters to the editor. Vaping shouldn't be an over-regulated activity. Vaping is used for ways to improve people's health or make them quit smoking. While it may get abused by a few users, the majority of people are doing it because it is healthier than smoking, or they would just like to live a life without cigarettes. Research done by Dr. Konstantinos Varsalinos has shown that if a high voltage is used, vaping could form formaldehyde, a chemical that can cause lung diseases. However, the tanks and accessories sold at local vape shops are not working at a high voltage. The tanks sold run on low voltage that does not create formaldehyde, just water vapor. Vaping is used to help people quit smoking. It creates water vapor instead of smoke and gives the people the feeling that they are smoking. Vapors slowly lower the nicotine level in the juice. My sister smoked at least 2 packs a day. Now she works at a local vape shop and is in the process of quitting smoking. She is at the lowest level of nicotine. The vaping has not affected her health in a bad way. It has helped her health. I don't think vaping supplies should have regulations on it because it's not healthy for us, but then they want to sell cigarettes, which are not healthy for us either. Signed, Sarah Edgecombe, Decatur. Fire victim appreciates help from community. On October 13th, my house caught fire due to an electric service panel shorting out. This has been a tragic event in my and my family's lives. The outstanding support and prayers that we have received from the community have made this tragedy more bearable. I would like to personally express my thanks and gratitude to all of the responders who helped during my house fire, including Decatur Fire Department, Long Creek Fire Department, and Decatur Ambulance Service. They have shown great professionalism, dedication, and compassion for the citizens of Decatur and the surrounding communities, time and again. We have received support from all over, from friends and family, as well as other concerned residents of the community. Of all the support, one of the most outstanding offers came from Woodcrest Apartments. They placed us in a fully furnished apartment with all amenities included while our home was rebuilt. The professionalism and compassion of the ownership, management, and entire staff have exceeded my thoughts and prayers in coping with this tragedy. This is truly Decatur, helping Decatur. Signed, Mark Hunter, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to all of the participants in the WSOY Community Food Drive, which celebrated another successful year last week. The annual awards were presented at a ceremony, with St. Patrick's School receiving the award for the school that donated the largest amount. Kenny Burns was named the Jeffrey Newhoff Spirit Award winner for volunteering. Checks were also presented to the food pantries and other organizations that benefit from the drive, which raised a record £1.3 million/dollars this year. Thumbs up to members of the Decatur Police Department, Macon County Sheriff's Office, and City and County Firefighters for the annual Guns and Hoses Kettle Campaign to raise money for the Salvation Army. The law enforcement officers and firefighters square off each year in a friendly competition to see which side can raise the most money. This is the 5th year for the competition and the 3rd year that City of Decatur personnel have been involved. Thumbs up for Meals on Wheels, which continues to serve hot, fresh meals to those who need them on a daily basis. In recent years, the program, operated by Catholic Charities, has expanded to the point where it offers hot meals 5 days a week and delivers to more people. That's because of an increase in demand and an increase in volunteers to deliver the meals. An added benefit to the delivery is that those clients who can't get out have someone to check on them and visit with them for a few minutes. Thumbs up to the Salvation Army for organizing an 8-week cooking program that is aimed at helping provide an employable job skill to those who need it. The Decatur Salvation Army School for Cooks is modeled after a similar program in Springfield and was made possible by a $50,000 grant from ADM Cares. Another class will be offered in the spring. thumbs up to the Mount Zion School District, which showed off its new Fieldhouse and Theater addition this week. The new 90,000 square foot addition features an indoor track, several basketball courts, and batting cages. The addition also features a 1,500 seat auditorium that can be used for musicals and play productions. The faculty is part of a $20 million. The facility is part of a $20 million construction and renovation program that Mount Zion will finish this year. Other additions include new turf for the football stadium and a new outdoor track. Editorial column, Carpet Bombing as a Tactic is Pure Folly. After the Paris and San Bernardino attacks, Americans are simultaneously eager to smash the Islamic State and wary of another major ground war in the Middle East. Some presidential candidates have found the perfect way to satisfy both impulses, turning large swaths of Iraq and Syria into a smoking heap of debris and body parts. Donald Trump has said, "I would bomb the expletive out of them." Ted Cruz has vowed, "We will utterly destroy them. We will carpet bomb them into oblivion." They haven't gotten to the point reached by John McCain in 2007 when he sang a few bars of what he called that old Beach Boys song, Bomb Iran. But Cruz shares McCain's capacity for amusement. "I don't know if sand can glow in the dark, but we're going to find out," he promised an audience in Iowa. Neither candidate is likely to pay a political price for embracing wanton destruction. Massive, merciless aerial bombardment sounds good to voters because it's simple, low risk, and spectacular on TV. Nothing could be better than annihilating vicious enemies at a minimal risk. A recent Washington Post ABC News poll found 73% of Americans favor expanded airstrikes on the Islamic State, also known as ISIS. But it's a solution that won't solve. The first flaw is that even the most ferocious use of air power can't, quote, completely destroy ISIS, unquote, as Cruz imagines. The second is that it stands to multiply our enemies and magnify the dangers we face. And that's leaving out the matter that Trump and Cruz ignore, which is the death and injury inflicted on innocents. Conventional bombing of German and Japanese cities failed to end World War II. During the Vietnam War, the U.S. dropped millions of tons of bombs, killing upwards of 100,000 civilians. But the enemy survived and prevailed. In his 1996 book, Bombing to Win, University of Chicago defense scholar Robert Pape, said the clear lesson of history is that strategic bombing doesn't work. The goal in past wars has been to force a government to capitulate by inflicting unbearable pain on its people or causing them to revolt. That's a non sequitur in this case because there is no government to be coerced or toppled. The Obama administration has been using air power against the Islamic State for more than a year. During that period, the U.S. military has delivered more than 20,000 missiles and bombs on the enemy, which is a lot, considering that ISIS is estimated to have as few as 20,000 fighters. Cruz said, "We carried out far more airstrikes against Iraq in the 1991 Gulf War, but then we were fighting an established state with a million-man army and a vast multitude of military assets. This war is more akin to going after the Taliban in Afghanistan in 2001. Newsweek reported then that the Bush administration had abandoned plans for an air campaign in Afghanistan because it couldn't find enough worthwhile targets, not because George W. Bush was too timid. As he put it, "I'm not going to fire a $2 million missile at a $10 empty tent and hit a camel in the butt." In Tuesday's debate, Cruz was asked whether he would carpet bomb Raqqa, the Syrian city of 220,000 people that is the de facto capital of the Islamic State. He replied, "You would carpet bomb where ISIS is, not a city, but the location of the troops." It was a non-answer. Does Cruz mean the enemy may lodge itself with impunity in urban neighborhoods, or does he mean he would obliterate civilian areas if fighters were present there? The latter has risks beyond being a likely war crime. Pape, who heads the Chicago Project on Security and Terrorism, told me that after the 2004 U.S. seizure of Fallujah, which caused hundreds of thousands of civilians to flee the city, Al-Qaeda in Iraq reaped so many new recruits that it quadrupled its size. Such experiences caused Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to wonder, are we creating more terrorists than we're killing? Civilian casualties from American drone strikes, which are far more precise than what Trump and Cruz propose, would have been numerous enough to alienate most Pakistanis and inspire some to commit terrorism. President Richard Nixon, who greatly expanded aerial bombing in Vietnam, publicly boasted that his strategy was effective. He was lying. In 1973, he wrote a memo to his national security advisor that summarized his honest assessment of the net result. Quote, zilch, end quote. New name won't help kids succeed. Don't you just love the name of the Every Student Succeeds Act? Let's see how long it is before its feel-good affirmative promise falls from grace and becomes as virulently despised as the outgoing No Child Left Behind Act. NCLB, as it's called in education circles, was once heralded as a positive development that stressed accountability. A federal mandate, it promised to ensure that school districts with low achievement scores and high dropout rates would either improve or provide students with additional resources or the opportunity to move into higher performing school districts. But that didn't happen. Instead, NCLB was blamed for the proliferation of high-stakes tests that crowded out art, music, and gym classes in favor of more test prep. Now, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, has called ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, a new day in public education and declared that its passage amounted to parents, students, and educators coming together with one message. Enough with the testing fixation, let's bring back the joy of learning. The fact of the matter is that the number one determinant of how well a student is going to perform in school is the child's parents and home life. This encompasses everything from whether a mom had her child as a teen with adequate prenatal care to whether a child spent his or her formative years in a stable household with family members who understood the importance of routines and literacy. A friend of mine who teaches in a school that hands out laptops to all students, regardless of ability to pay equipment fees, recently told me that one of his pupils complained that she was unable to complete her assignment because her home does not have internet access. The teacher suggested she go to the library in order to access the Wi-Fi networks there. But the student was baffled. I don't even know where the library is, she said. There is a certain kind of parent for whom it would be inconceivable to never have taken their child to the local library. For other parents, however, it isn't a matter of malice or neglect. The public library, like so many other institutions, is simply unknown or inaccessible resource to them as well. These are the kids of inequalities, like the famous 30 million word gap between what low income and more affluent kids have heard before kindergarten. That can't be remedied with a policy that changes schools with getting students college and career ready, but offers few incentives or consequences. The Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights reacted to ESSA with a call to action. This law requires and expects that all communities and families being served by schools are at the table as plans are devised to and executed to improve educational outcomes for students. For far too long, decision makers have paid lip service to students who are low income, of color, have a disability, or are learning English as a second language. Yet these same under-resourced parents are often ill-equipped to advocate for themselves and their children. If low-income children are ever to do better in school, we may first need to figure out a way to help their parents do better in life. Obituaries. Lorraine F. Allen, 95, died December 12, 2015. Graveside services were held Tuesday, December 15th, 10:30 a.m. at Chesed Shel Emeth Cemetery. Memorial contributions are preferred to a charity of the donor's choice. A local memorial service will be announced at a later date. Berger Memorial Chapel is in charge of arrangements. Rudell Pete Ashbrook, 88, of Monticello, formerly of Bement, died Tuesday, December 15th, 2015. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. today, December 18th, at the Hines Funeral Home in Bement. Visitation was at 11 a.m. until time of services. Burial was in with military honors by the Albert Parker American Legion Post 620, is in the Bement Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the Carl Hospice Program, the First Christian Church, Bement, or the charity of the donor's choice. James Edward Elliott, 41, of Southern Pines, North Carolina, formerly of Lovington, died December 11th, 2015. Military rites are at 2 p.m. Saturday, at 5855 Lakeland Drive, Macon. Arrangements are by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Memorials may be made to the family. Robert William Bob Hill, 88, of Macon, died Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. A memorial service to celebrate his life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 19th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 1 p.m. until service time Saturday afternoon. Memorials may be made to the Homeward Bound Pet Shelter, Decatur. Lawrence Edward Larry Watkins, 76, of Decatur, died Tuesday, December 15th, 2015. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 12 noon Monday, December 21st, 2015, at Glad Tidings Assembly of God, followed by a graveside service at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Riverton, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the family. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of arrangements. Dear Abby, rocky marriage is back on, but money keeps couple apart. Dear Abby, my wife and I have been married 3 years. It has been rocky since year two. She's a great mother to our kids, especially the one who's medically challenged. We have broken up twice so far and are now back together. However, because of my job, we live in different states. Bottom line, I'm no longer sure this is the right relationship for me. She goes to school full-time while I work a ton of overtime to support two households. We hardly see or spend time with each other. She said she would rather me work and not see me so that everything gets paid. I feel she's more about the money than the marriage. What do you think? Unhappily married in Baltimore. Dear Unhappily, you and your wife both appear to be carrying a heavy load. For the sake of your children, it would be nice if your marriage could be resuscitated. However, not every marriage can be, and the arrangement you have now is clearly not working for you. If your wife actually feels that she would rather not see you so that everything gets paid, then I think she's made her feelings clear. The marriage no longer exists. It's a financial arrangement. For that, you both have my sympathy. Name game. Dear Abby, why does it feel awkward for me to call my husband by his first name? When I say his name from another room to get his attention, it only feels natural for me to call him Babe. When I'm talking about him to someone else, I use his name, but it still makes me cringe. It's a perfectly normal, common name, so I don't know why it makes me feel so uncomfortable. And this doesn't just apply to my husband. Before him, I was in a 6-year relationship with my high school sweetheart and had the same problem. Why can I only call my significant others Babe when talking to them? Signed, Hubby's name is... Dear Hubby's name, when couples become intimately involved, it is common for them to use pet names with each other. That you call your husband and your former boyfriend by the same name is interesting. Could it be that subconsciously you are/were afraid that if you don't use the same pet name, you will be absent-mindedly use the wrong one? Seat neighbors. Dear Abby, my cousin and I have season tickets for a Broadway series at our local theater. Our problem is two women who sit next to us in the box. After intermission, when the second act starts, they talk loudly to each other as long as 10 minutes into the show. I want to say something, but I don't want to cause any negativity or bad feelings because we see them at each show. How should I deal with it? Signed, audience member. Dear member, here's how. When the women continue their conversation after the curtain rises, just say to the one nearest you, "Please be quiet, we can't hear the performance." That's not rude, it's being assertive. If they persist after that, complain to the management and ask that, if possible, in the future you be seated apart from the magpies. Here's another holiday giving story. Realtors continue tradition of giving at Webster Cantrell Hall. Everyone needs a cuddly toy, especially when you're away from home at Christmas time. On Thursday, the Decatur Association of Realtors made their annual trek to Webster Cantrell Hall to drop off Christmas presents for the resident young people, which they've been doing for the last 10 years, said Norm Willoughby, executive officer. As the members of the association recall, the idea came from Jim Macy at one of their luncheons. His wife was a member of the board at Webster Cantrell. The money to pay for the presents comes from the realtors, who take up a collection. Member Roberta Munson went out to purchase the stuffed toys. "We went to 3 Walgreens and wiped out all the stuffed toys," said Donna Munson, president of the association. "Each bag contains lounge pants, a book, and items like soap and shampoo, and each resident will also receive 2 gift cards for $25 each, one for Walmart and one for Kohl's." For a while, Willoughby said, the realtors collected wish lists and tried to buy clothes and underwear for kids and pack those in their bags, but this year they decided it was simpler to give them gift cards and let them choose their own, so they'd be sure to get what they want. It was too confusing trying to remember the preferences of so many different youngsters. "I remember standing in the store going through all this stuff," Willoughby said, laughing. Staff will take the kids shopping at a few at a time, which is a treat for the kids anyway, and let them pick out their own things. As teen boys came to pick up their bags, individually packed and labeled, they shook hands and introduced themselves and thanked the members of the association individually. The girls' bags, stacked in a separate area, were to be delivered later in the day. Among things that they've done for residents over the years include buying new beds for the residential unit when Webster Cantrell expanded, and providing backpacks full of school supplies at the beginning of the school year. We thought, since they'd done that they probably weren't going to do Christmas this year, said Holly Newbin, director of the development for Webster Cantrell. "We just can't thank them enough," she said. Cleaning lady caught on camera stealing from daycare. A Decatur woman reportedly was caught on police surveillance video as she stole items from a daycare center where she had previously worked while employed by a cleaning firm. Sherry L. Lowe, 46, was arraigned Tuesday on 2 Class 1 counts of burglary for allegedly stealing food, cleaning supplies, and various other items from Discovery Depot Daycare Center, 2715 North 27th Street. Lowe, who was booked into the Macon County Jail following her arrest December 7th, is being held on a $20,000 bond. She's due back in court December 30th for her preliminary hearing. On October 5th, employees of the daycare facility noticed many items were missing, including 30 pounds of hamburger meat, corn dogs, garbage bags, tea bags, and laundry soap. 5 days later, they noticed that cases of water and Pepsi products were also missing, said a probable cause affidavit by Macon County Sheriff's Detective Roger Pope. After the daycare director contacted police, Pope installed 2 covert cameras in the facility. At 12:37 a.m. October 26th, Sherry Lowe is seen stealing plastic bags, paper towels, and other items from the storage area at the daycare center before exiting with the items in a large plastic bag, Pope wrote in a statement. At 3:27 a.m. the following day, the camera captured her stealing more items from the storage area, in addition to a few things from the pantry. When she was interviewed by police on December 7th, Lowe admitted that she had committed these thefts. Lowe said she obtained the business key from her supervisor's van and entered through the front door of the center. The owner of the company where Lowe was employed told police other businesses where Lowe had worked also reported items were stolen. Here's some items from Buzz for December 18th. Jazz Festival. Tickets are available for the 41st Central Illinois Jazz Festival. The event is February 5th through the 7th at Decatur Conference Center Hotel. 8 traveling bands, a house band, and special guests are on the schedule for the event. Patron tickets for the event are $145 per person. Non-patron tickets are... Oh, dear. Must be a misprint. It says $145 per person. Non-patrons are $35. For more information, see juvejazz.com, J-U-V-A-E jazz, all one word, .com, or the group's Facebook page. Foo Fighters Tribute. John Allabaugh, a 1979 Charleston High School graduate and a 1984 Eastern Illinois University graduate, with degrees in accounting and computer science, will return to town to kick off a series of shows in a tribute to Foo Fighters' Skin and Bones album. The performance is 8 p.m. today at Mother's Bar in Charleston. The entire album will be performed by In Your Honor. Jingle Bell Rock. Jingle Bell Rock, a raucous holiday variety review, will be presented tonight at Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Tickets for the 7:30 p.m. show are $20 and $15 and are available at www.cityblm.org. Mason City Comedy. Ryan Singer performs tonight and Saturday, December 19th at Mason City Limits Comedy Club. Showtimes are 8:30 p.m. today and 8 p.m. on Saturday. Tickets are $12.50. Prepay with a credit card at mclimits.com. For show reservations, or call 482-5233. That's 482-5233 for show reservations only, and pay cash at the door. Man in Springfield, an evening with Chris Mann, is at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield tonight. Tickets for the 8 p.m. show are $40 and are available at the box office. Rudolph Musical. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the musical, will be presented at the Peoria Civic Center at 2 p.m. Sunday, December 20th. Tickets are $65, $45, $35, and $25 and are available at the box office and via Ticketmaster. This is all the time we have for today's reading of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 18th, 2015. As there will be no readings next Friday or the following Friday, this is the last reading of 2015, and perhaps the last we will ever do. It has been my privilege to have had this opportunity to read with you for the last 4 years. I truly hope you have enjoyed our time together as much as I have. I would like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a happy, healthy 2016. I do hope that we'll be able to return sometime in the new year. I look forward to it. Have a very Merry Christmas and a happy and healthy New Year, as I said. This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 18th, 2015.